This is file number 33. Gene McMillan is interviewing George Anastasio, a former teacher at Hotchkiss School, at his home, 88 Route 126, Falls Village. The date is October 15th, 2012. What is your full name?
F. George Anastasio.
And your birthplace?
Waterbury, Connecticut.
And your birthday?
May 8th, 1930.
And your parents' names?
Mary Anastasio and Dominic Anastasio.
And do you have siblings?
I have five. Three brothers, two sisters, all older than I am. Their names are, starting from the oldest, working down, Angelo, Richard, Mario, Olga, and Lida, L-I-D-A.
What's your educational background?
I have a Bachelor of Arts degree from the University of Connecticut, 1954, a Master of Arts in Teaching degree from Wesleyan University in 1963, and a Diploma of Further Study, which I got at the same time at Wesleyan.
And how did you come to this area?
I was hired at Hotchkiss School to teach French in the French department. I started there in 1963, the fall of 63.
Who hired you?
Bill Olson was the headmaster.
What did you teach besides French?
I taught French for a number of years, but then later on I taught Spanish as well. And then in 1973, I moved over to the drama department. I became chairman of the drama department and continued teaching one French course, but all the rest of my courses were in the theater area.
And who were some of the colleagues that you remember?
From the French department?
Please.
David Demaray, Peter Beaumont, later on Carol Demaray. There was George DeSchweinitz and Joseph Corot were among the French language teachers with whom I taught. In the drama department, there was Joel Brehm and... Ed Lepine, right, and Bill Ellis and Mark Godfrey were among the colleagues there.
And when I come to transcribe this, I'm going to ask you for spellings.
Okay.
Now, when we were talking before, you told me several major policy changes that Bill Olson introduced to the school, and that's what I'd like you to talk about now, please.
Right. Hotchkiss did undergo a number of changes in my years there. Some of them, I think, were probably the most important that ever took place at the school. One was the going coeducational. That was something that was happening in other private schools in the country and was done with a certain amount of trepidation on the part of some of the members of the faculty and the what you might call the broader Hotchkiss community, because of wondering how it would affect the programs that were so deeply institutionalized at Hotchkiss. One of the biggest concerns was what would it do to the big athletic program, but it was handled, and the co-ed population was introduced, I believe, in 1974, and it was done with about 30 young girls came onto campus. It was eventually, the number of girls was increased until it's gotten pretty much to 50%, 50-50. And it didn't affect the athletic program anywhere near as much as they thought it did, for a number of reasons, not the least of which was that the school population has grown quite a bit. And so there were, today there are probably almost as many boys, if not as many, as there were before it went co-ed. So that was one of the big changes. And then the second change, which I just mentioned, was the size of the school. The number of students, the number of faculty has increased dramatically, I would say. A number of new dormitories had to be built, and they were. And there were changes also in the courses that were offered. Up until that time, it was a very classic education. Students took 4 years of a foreign language. They also took 2 years of a classical language, either Greek or Latin. But new courses were added through these years. Shortly before I got there, they had added Russian. But then with the coming of the girls, the music department has become much larger and more extensive today. The drama department didn't exist when I got to Hotchkiss in the 60s. But the drama department did come into being shortly before the girls arrived, I'd say about 1972. The arts program has grown tremendously. It existed prior to that time, but it had only one teacher. Today, it has several teachers. They've added a dance department. All of these things can be attributed to the increase in school size and the addition of young ladies to the student body.
Tell me about the faculty, the way the faculty was determined ethnically, and how it's changed.
Well, going back to before the time I was hired, Hotchkiss, the faculty, first of all, there were about 40 members of the faculty. Today it's much larger. But those 40 people tended to be long-time faculty members. Most of them had been there from their early years. And by the time I got there, there were many who had been there for 15, 20, 30 years. Today, you find it that they have much more of a turnover. Young people come, stay a year or two or three, and then move on. But back then, they tended to stay there. A lot of the faculty were independently wealthy. They came from wealthy families. And they came to Hotchkiss as young people getting out of college who didn't have to work, didn't have to have careers, but who elected to spend their years teaching.
And that's where the term a dollar a year man came.
There were those among them who were really dollar a year men, yes. I won't name any, but there were a number of them who were wealthy. And then there were people who were not independently wealthy, but they came to Hotchkiss during the Depression years and were quite satisfied to get a job with the minimum salary, but one that provided housing and fringe benefits that were rather important.
Were there a lot of married couples when you came? Or were they mostly bachelor faculty?
No, when I came, I would say that there was a fairly large number of bachelors, but many of the old-timers were married and had rather small families. A family of more than two was considered large among the Hotchkiss faculty.
Okay.
And also changes that took place in my years were the people that were hired to teach at Hotchkiss, more and more they were not from wealthy families. They were not from people who had graduated themselves from private schools, but they were more, it was a more diverse faculty body, and my understanding, and I'm sure it's absolutely true, I was the first Southern European, person of Southern European descent, to teach at Hotchkiss. Mostly up to that time they had been Northern European. Of course, they were all white, and they were, I would say all, I don't know of any exceptions, were Protestant. So the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant
it was very
well
much
represented. Yes.
It was very well represented.
Yes.
I think you told me that it was, quote, a faculty-run school. Would you discuss that?
Well, the tradition in Hotchkiss was that all important school matters were determined by the faculty. However, a strong headmaster pretty much managed to guide, to control, to see that things went as he thought they should go. This was true of Bill Olson, but it was also true, as I understand it, of George Van Sanford, mm-hmm. who was the headmaster from 1925 to 1955. A strong headmaster would bring up issues that he thought were important, and if he thought some changes were necessary, he would often suggest them, or he'd have them suggested perhaps by someone else, and they would hash it out at rather lengthy meetings. If there was a great deal of dissent on the part of the faculty, what I was told by the old timers is George Van Sanford would just put off having a vote until maybe 10:30 or 11 or 11:30 or 12 o'clock at night, at which time they would be pretty well beaten down, the opposition, and knowing the way he would prefer that the voting went, they would finally give in and he would get his way. But, the headmaster, a strong headmaster, not only had a fairly good hold on the faculty, but also a fairly good hold on the trustees, if they trusted him and believed that he was hewing the right course for the school, they would support him. So that the idea of a faculty-run school was more in theory
rather than practice.
Yeah, and the perception of it was so. But for example, the going co-ed was something that I think the majority of the faculty was not in favor of for various reasons. But eventually, when these reasons were made known, then before the actual question was brought to the faculty, many of the objections were resolved one way or another. And so it made the passage of this transition more acceptable, and it went through.
Was there a heavy emphasis on sports?
Well, this is true of most of the traditional private schools, yes. Very heavy tradition on sports, and one of the old-time faculty members, I remember saying that at Hotchkiss we have the tradition of the students study hard in the mornings when they go to class, in the evenings in their study halls, and in the afternoons they play hard on the athletic fields. And so it's athletics and studies, and that was pretty much what made the students' day.
That covers most of it. Now, when you were working at Hotchkiss, you had the dramatics workshops, and tell me a little bit about how the workshop was different from the other part of the dramatic department.
Well, okay, initially there was no drama department. There was the Hotchkiss Dramatic Association, an extracurricular activity, but it was one that was run by the faculty member who directed the plays, or the members. So at one point they had two people who took turns directing plays, and they put on three major productions a year: fall, winter, and spring plays. When I moved into taking over as the director of drama for the Hotchkiss Dramatic Association, there were so many students who tried out for plays, and of course when you're doing a major play, you pick the best people when they have tryouts, people you think are best for the roles. And many good people who are interested, and in some cases you think they are talented, they never got a chance to be in plays until maybe the better students or the ones who are older graduated. And then they would move, some of them would move up. But at one point there were so many trying out that I decided I would try to have a subgroup, and I called it the workshop, the drama workshop group. And with these students, I brought them in and I gave them some instruction on acting, and they taught them little things that were handy to know if you're going to be in a play. So when a director says, come in from stage left and go to center right, they knew exactly what you're talking about. Then you say, assume a quarter left position to the other person with whom you're acting, they knew exactly what, or a full front position, or a three-quarter right position, teaching them the vernacular of the stage, and also I started giving them little skits to do, and at one point we were doing skits from the Thurber Carnival, and they were so involved in doing so well that I actually produced two plays that winter term. And the second one was done by the workshop group, and it was very well received, and they did a beautiful job. And so my idea was to keep the workshop group going, and hopefully I could talk the school into having a drama department where I could actually do away with the workshop group and do things with my drama students that were equivalent and perhaps even more extensive. And I had the school talked into the idea of a drama department before I left to go on sabbatical in 1970. And I was half promised that we would have a drama department. When I came back, I could start getting it going. But when I came back, the situation had changed in that the person who replaced me for the year I was gone couldn't handle both groups, and he turned one over to a faculty wife who was very interested in theater. And so she took over the drama workshop group and talked herself into a position of keeping that group when I returned, so that there were two separate entities, one working with that person and the other one, the HDA with me. But that wasn't working out too well because we became two competing groups, so I decided to withdraw from the situation, and that person took over both groups and ran it, and was allowed to start a drama department, which was a good idea. When she left after 4 years, I moved back into that slot, and I moved into a situation where I was chairman of the drama department. It worked out rather well, and the next 20 years, that's how we maintained it. I had, in some cases, one, or in some cases, two people working with me. The school was easily talked into having one person who would run the technical side of the theater, because the technical side can be a difficult one to run, in that you're working with power tools, power machines, saws, and you're working up in the flies, which would be 20 feet above the stage. It can be dangerous, and you need an experienced adult running it. So that worked out rather well. As a matter of fact, what precipitated that was that in the last year that the other person was running drama, they had a rather serious accident in the theater, and one which, incidentally, I had predicted, and I tried to talk the administration into hiring someone to run the tech side, because I said students are working unsupervised and it's just an accident waiting to happen, which occurred. So anyway, with a drama technical person, it became possible to do much more with our productions, and the drama department, I think, did rather good job.
In that 4 years that you were not technically involved in the drama. Did you start an audiovisual department?
No, I didn't. Well, yes. There was a teacher who was in charge of audiovisual equipment, but he was not all that interested in doing it. And he, when I left the drama area, he suggested I take over. And I actually formed a group of students who could run all of the equipment, the movie projectors and the tape recorders. And I talked the school into buying a very early black and white video camera. And with the most primitive equipment, I even formed a group that put on a weekly video news show, which was quite successful and had a lot of students involved in it. Yes, I did work with...
The Week in Review?
It was called The Week in Review, yes.
And with your background in journalism, you got the kids to write a script. How did that get put together?
We would give them news assignments. In some cases, with the assignment, they would go out with the video camera and they'd actually interview people, or they'd get footage at an event that was taking place. It might be a sports event. It might be a main speaker coming in to address the students. And we would also gather news of what was going on, what club activities were happening. And we would write a news script for it. And then every Sunday we would spend about 5 or 6 hours up at the main building putting this together. And it was very difficult because there were no such things as machines that allowed us to get film clips and put them into one continuous show. Mm. But we found ways of doing things that's amazing when I think about it. And I have to give the kids the credit because they were the ones that came up with all these incredible ideas. And it was quite a production thing that we did.
Now, one of the other things that you told me about was an unwritten rule about retiring at age 65. Would you like to tell me about that, please?
Well, yeah. Hotchkiss always had a rule that... But it was an unwritten rule. It was never stated when you were hired or when you were working there. But as a person approached his 65th year, then I guess the way it happened, because it happened that way with a number of people I know, it happened with me, is they would call a faculty member in and say, well, you know you're going to be 65 this year, and so, of course, you'll be retiring at the end of the year. And people always... went along with that, and they retired. I think that the rule made sense for some people. There were some people who were really burned out, not only at 65, but in some cases at 60 or 55, and really should not have continued teaching, but they were allowed to teach until they were 65. So it didn't really address the question of teacher burnout in any way. To keep a burned out teacher for 4 or 5 or 10 years beyond the point where he should really have thought about getting out of teaching, but couldn't because, hey, that's how he earns his living. It didn't change things. And on the other hand, there were teachers I felt that really had 2, 3, 5, 8, 10 more years of good teaching to give to the school, and who were forced to retire. Some of them didn't want to. I could name one who I can... There was one teacher who I considered the most outstanding teacher on the faculty, who had incredible success in the area that he taught. And to this day, there are many, many graduates who will attest to the fact that that was a course that absolutely prepared them for life in a way that no other course did. And to see him leave, and he did not want to leave, he was a bachelor, he enjoyed teaching, he enjoyed the students, I thought was short-sighted to say the least. When my turn came, they called me in and said the same thing. He'll be 65 and he'll be retiring, of course. And I said to the headmaster, who at this time was Mr. O'Dean, I said, no, I don't plan to retire. And he was taken aback completely. And he just looked at the dean of faculty who was sitting with him. And she, in turn, looked at him. They made no answer, and they never brought up the subject again. And I stayed another year and went beyond 65. The next year, Mr. O'Dean had left, and perhaps that's one reason why he didn't make a major issue of it. He was going, and he knew it. Nobody else did, but he knew he was leaving, and I guess he figured it was no great concern to him. But the replacement headmaster, who was a longtime faculty member and administrative member of the school, came in to replace Mr. O'Dean until they could find the permanent headmaster. And he called me in and said, you know, you've gone beyond the retirement age. I said, well, I pretended ignorance and said, well, what's that? He said, well, there's an unwritten rule that you have to retire. I said, well, really? This was never pointed out to me before. I heard of it only by scuttlebutt from people who retired, but they had never formally announced this rule to me. And I said, and besides, it seems to me that's not really legal. It seems to me there are laws that prevent people from, it's called age discrimination. Well, that sort of stymied him. So anyway, I did retire at the end of that year, but only because,
You chose to.
I chose to, for various reasons, yes. But actually,